Hey, quick reminder right before we get into the show, FC Insiders, our newsletter that comes out every Wednesday at 2 p.m., just relaunched, and we are talking about insights and information that will help you shape the future of your brand. We're not so much about predicting the future as we are about giving you tools to shape your future. And those tools are being talked about in media companies like Forbes, Forrester, and NBC Universal, who are saying that we at Future Commerce are helping brands make decisions that shape the future of retail as we know it. You can get those types of insights right now at FC Insiders newsletter, and you can sign up on that list right now at futurecommerce.fm. Let's get to the show. Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Future Commerce is brought to you by Gladly. What if customer service could feel like a conversation between friends? Gladly is a customer service platform that puts people at the center, not tickets or cases. By enabling B2C companies to focus on people talking to people, Gladly powers a lifetime of conversions across every channel from phone, email, text, chat, and social media. See what a truly customer-centered platform looks like at gladly.com/FC demo. That's gladly.com/FC, as in Future Commerce, demo. Hello and welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
And I'm Brian. And today we have an amazing guest, Kiri Masters, the founder of Bobsled Marketing and author of upcoming book, Amazon for CMOs, and also co-host of the E-Commerce Brain Trust podcast. Welcome, Kiri.
Thank you, guys. So great to be here. I've been a huge fan over the last couple of years.
Well, you were one of the, you were on the show once before, a long time ago.
No. Other way around.
Is it?
We were on her show.
Oh. Yeah. That's right. And like 2 years later, you guys finally returned the favor. Thank you for bringing that up, Brian. Oh.
Yeah, I set that up to make us look really bad.
Well done.
Well, welcome, Kiri. I feel like we do have a relationship going back quite a ways, but for those who aren't as familiar with you or Bobsled or the Brain Trust, could you fill people in on who Kiri Masters is?
Sure. So Bobsled Marketing is an agency that helps brands with their Amazon channel across advertising, marketing, operational support, things like that. And so I started that company almost 5 years ago after a completely unrelated career in banking. And really at this sort of really pivotal time in the Amazon environment where a lot of brands were having a, oh my God moment, we need to figure this out. And we don't have people inside our organization that really know much about how this works. So as an agency, we sort of were at the crest of that wave and I love putting our best practices and thoughts out there in content through our blog, through the podcast that I host called E-Commerce Brain Trust. I write for Forbes Retail as well. And it's a real passion of mine to not just keep our learnings and best practices to ourselves, but to really share that out to the community because there's a lot of confusion about Amazon.
Yeah.
You can say that again. Well, I think some of it's from the, like, you know, there aren't too many companies in the world that are a platform for so many things and mean something different to so many people. To my kids, Amazon is the thing that turns the lights on and off in our house. And, you know, and has a couple TV shows that they watch. And to other people, it's the infrastructure that runs their whole business. And to some others still, it's the thing that's helping, you know, assist ICE in facial recognition. But I digress. it means so many different things to so many people. And I think people tend to, you know, also equate them to marketplaces, which I think is really where the core focus is for what you do.
Yes, exactly. I think that the how Amazon helps ICE with facial recognition might need to be a separate episode for you, just saying. Not my area of expertise.
That's
like
that's a trend. That's a trend in our show.
Yeah. I'm curious. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about like the focus of what you do, you know, what you do specialize in the world of Amazon and marketplaces and the kind of advice that you give to people who are trying to grow their business by using it either as, you know, a direct channel or as part of a larger strategy.
Yeah. Well, that's a big question. We typically as an agency and the people that I generally end up speaking with are mid-market sized companies, who have really established themselves either in brick and mortar retail through wholesale accounts or even through their own e-commerce direct channel. And they know that Amazon's important. They know that shoppers are searching for their products on Amazon and that it is a channel for them. They might have a little confusion around whether Amazon's just a distribution channel or also a marketing channel for that reason. And I'd love to talk a little bit about how it's really, Amazon's really grown into being both. But they recognize that Amazon is not a core competency for them. And so that then they're often going out and trying to find a consultant or an agency to help them. They might also be interested in hiring an internal person or team to accomplish the same thing. There's lots of different approaches to figuring Amazon out, but I think it starts and ends with education. If you're not educating yourself about the different business models with Amazon, if you're not educating yourself around the different programs that, and there's a million programs coming and going every week. Like the most recent one, which is really interesting, is sort of a hybrid of their wholesale model and their retail model, where Amazon is setting the price of products on their platform. And if you're a merchant who is just using their FBA infrastructure, Amazon will set the price for you and pay you a guaranteed amount for that sale. But then that means that they can change the price however they want according to market forces. And so with a program like that, you read about it in the news. And as a brand, you're like, okay, well, that's interesting. But what does that mean for me? Should I do it? Mm. Or like what's the downsides or what's the upside here? It's really difficult with all of the news and the changes to know what is the best approach for me and my brand, given our margin, given our retail relationships, given our customer base, given our business, you know, priorities. It gets complicated real fast.
Yeah, it's quite confusing. Like there's so many different things you can take advantage of at Amazon, and navigating through their different services and programs and offerings and like, it can be challenging, especially if you're, you know, introducing a new brand or entering Amazon for the first time. It's pretty intimidating. How often are you seeing businesses enter Amazon for the first time or launch a business on Amazon? Is that something that you see come through a lot, at your agency?
After doing this for 4.5 years, going on 5, I'm still really surprised at the number of brands, like household name brands, that come to us and say, we haven't really been engaging with Amazon. We've been dialing it in for the last few years. No one's really looked at it. We just fill our purchase orders and that's it. And I'm still shocked with the prospects that come to us and some of these brands. I'm like, wait, you haven't figured it out? And it is still surprising to me that some quite large brands have not really invested in the channel. And then of course there is we're just joking before the show that a lot of the information that you find about Amazon is really written or geared towards a wantrepreneur crowd, and because Amazon's kind of become this cottage industry for early stage entrepreneurs to launch a brand and like just stick their label on something from Alibaba and try and like generate sales on Amazon through that method, which there isn't anything wrong with that per se. It's just that most of the information, the volume of information that's out there is really written for that crowd. So if you're a mid-sized company or you're trying to figure this out, it's difficult to get good quality, up-to-date information.
That's really interesting. Yeah, as a consumer, I feel that. You know what I mean? Like as a shopper on Amazon, which by the way, I need to go back and do some analysis of my shopping online, but I think I'm probably pretty consistent with the average shopper where like 50% of my online shopping is actually through Amazon, if not maybe more.
Mm.
Because that's the most recent number. I think it was like 48 or 49% of all online shopping in the US was done on Amazon. But I which is just crazy. And actually it's crazy. 50% of that is through the third party marketplace. So there's a huge opportunity. I can't believe that more people aren't selling through the marketplace or just coming to the marketplace for the first time, given that is 25% of the entire web sales like that go through the third party marketplace on Amazon. Like it's like skipping the internet almost.
Yeah. That's a question that I have for you guys, because you're not purely just talking about e-commerce on this show, but you're talking about retail, and with Amazon comprising 50% of all e-commerce, you don't talk about Amazon as much as, you know, in relation to that, that breakdown, it seems to me.
Well, I mean, definitely there's a bit of a gap on our expertise there. I would say that we do talk about consumer brands, and it's interesting that in this day and age, you know, the place of discovery for some consumer brands for a good portion of the population is Amazon.com. I think Anker has become a household name, especially for aftermarket or sort of OEM style parts and accessories for electronics. And that's a brand that I think gained their notoriety and their direct-to-consumer strategy from the foothold that they had on Amazon. So I think that the sense of the perception is changing, but the playbook isn't so established for a brand that launches purely on Amazon to scale out.
Yes. And that is, that's an example when we're talking about brands that got their start on Amazon. Anker is kind of the lone, you know, the biggest, certainly the biggest example, but there isn't a whole lot of other examples out there that show how deep Anker went on Amazon, used it as a platform for R&D and figuring out what their assortment looks like and what customers want and how to do basically everything. They squeezed every last drop out of Amazon, and that now they're in 30 countries, airport stores, Best Buy, everywhere you can buy electronics. But they're just, I think, due to the relative maturity of the platform, even though Amazon's been, you know, in a retail sense, been around for 20 years, we're only really probably just starting to experience those brands who are Amazon first really coming out into the wider world. Because I think what I also hear from a lot of brands that sell on Amazon as they're having Amazon as their primary revenue stream is that they get addicted to Amazon. And doesn't that just sound like what happens to consumers as well? Amazon is creating this addictive product, not only for consumers, but for brands themselves.
My sense is with at least consumer brands on Amazon, they get addicted. But I think that now with Amazon's paid performance platform, where you have now an infusion of brands that do have capital backing who can compete for top position, you also have an organic problem on Amazon that brands are going to have to figure out how to navigate, where that pay for performance is also addicting. And we see it in other areas like direct to consumer, where you have massive venture backing is fueling higher cost customer acquisition costs and lower return on investment. And so a lot of the strategy shifting to retention marketing. And I wonder how you do that in the world of Amazon, where you don't necessarily control that relationship with the customer. I'm not sure if that's something that comes up in your end of the business very often.
Yeah, that is a major downside of Amazon from a brand's perspective, is the loss of any direct relationship with the customer. And I find this to be critical of Amazon for a second, which might end up being more than just a second. They speak out of two sides of their mouth on this issue. On one hand, they don't want merchants or sellers to be able to interact directly with customers. And in their language, they just refer to our customers, Amazon's customers, over and over again. Like, this is not your customer that's buying your product from you. This is our customer, and you're using our platform to get that sale. So they're our customer. But then with regulatory issues, right, like all of this hoo-ha around sales taxes and who's required to collect sales taxes, and Amazon keeps saying, well, we're just a platform. We are just bringing sellers and customers together and facilitating the transaction. That's all we're doing. So we shouldn't be required to do all this tax administration. But then they keep talking about our customer. No, you can't contact them. No, you can't remarket to them. No, you can't like drive them off our platform. So, you know, I think that all of this tax scrutiny is going to come to a head pretty soon. There's just so much of a spotlight on Amazon around taxes, antitrust, all this stuff that the government is coming after them on. Something's going to have to give there. But this, to go back to the original question, this problem of having a connection with the customer is a massive issue that most brands have with the platform, because that's what they're conceding at the end of the day is data, and having that customer list. You can't have it on Amazon. I will also say that on the data front, they have started to really open this up quite significantly, but only on the seller side. So they've launched all these new metrics. Like, a particularly interesting one earlier this year is called New to Brand, and it's for all of the orders that you got through advertising. You can see how many of those shoppers bought from your brand for the first time on Amazon. So that's a really interesting metric that was never available before. And this goes to the point of looking at Amazon not only as a distribution channel, but as a marketing channel. And this is a customer acquisition metric. And Amazon started to share this, really surprised me. But the reason why is that Amazon's building a very profitable advertising platform, like you said. And this is one way of showing advertisers, hey, if you spent more money on advertising, you just introduced, 10% of orders came from new customers. Don't you want to increase that? So I think that they're all of the metrics that they are launching now look great, and I'm glad that they're sharing more data, but it still all comes back to them building this advertising business, which is exciting, but
Amazon first. Yeah. It's Amazon centric. It's sort of selfish.
And full disclosure, Brian was formerly employed at Amazon.
Well,
keep that in mind.
I actually think there's another sort of discrepancy in the messaging here, which is that, you see Amazon encouraging brands to brand building on the platform with no connection to customer. Brand building is a very empty echo. It can be a very empty echo chamber. And so, like, you see on Prime Day, Lady Gaga launch her beauty brand on Amazon. And what kind of message does that send to the rest of the market around how you should be using Amazon to sell? Have you talked to any of your customers about that launch, and what do you think that means for how Amazon's going to proceed going forward? Because I think it was pretty groundbreaking.
Yeah, this has two messages to me. One is Amazon's private label strategy. And this upsets a lot of brands, because if you're Casper and then Amazon, you know, you're spending all this money on Amazon, you're spending media dollars there and everything's good. And then next minute, Amazon launches their own private label mattress that's like $250. It seems really, that doesn't seem right to a lot of brands. Not having said that, private label in a retail store environment has been around forever, and Amazon's not doing anything particularly different to what a Target would do. Like, a Target would have all this data around what products are selling well, where is there a gap in our assortment? Okay, let's go and create a private label brand in that space. Amazon's really doing the exact same thing, but it just, for some reason, it really sticks in the craw of these brands on a different level. I think it's just because the extent of data that Amazon has about shoppers seems more significant. And my hypothesis on this, having looked at like the spread of Amazon private label brands and where they kind of fall from a, you know, dollar comparison standpoint, it's my strong belief that Amazon is really trying to fill in gaps in their assortment rather than become an OEM manufacturer. I don't think that they've got a particular interest in like being, you know, creating a house of brands or anything like that. I think that they're just trying to fill in a gap between the cheap stuff directly from China and the big national brand that is riding on their, you know, 100-year history. Amazon's coming in, identifying gaps and saying, okay, no one's in that space. We want to keep customers on our platform as much as possible. And so we really need a product at a $32 price point because there's no one playing there right now. And then the second point about the Lady Gaga House Laboratories brand is how Amazon is looking more like a social media channel every day. Have you noticed that there's like editorial reviews, there's influencers everywhere, there's storefronts, there's live video like QVC. And so this is a big push that Amazon's doing into content. And they've just never been that great at top of funnel stuff, to be honest. Like, it's always been very quite transactional, you know, really good at that mid lower funnel part of activities. But in terms of product discovery, they have not really done that great a job. And so if they're looking to build this massive advertising powerhouse, which I think they can and should and will, then they need to be doing more. They need to have more offerings at that top of funnel level. So I think that that is why they're working with more influencers, doing live video, doing more editorial content, all of that stuff. I think all paths lead back to their ad platform.
Well, I think they're also learning in some ways from other modern brands who are competing for the attention of the consumer. The consumer wants to be entertained 24/7. And believe it or not, there's not enough means of you know, actual brand focused or brand centered content. That's why you see lots of brands rushing there. I was watching a 2 p.m. Websmith and Shoelace webinar yesterday about how digitally native brands can sort of linearly scale themselves out of having to be addicted for pay for performance. And it was really interesting. You know, there's this really interesting maturation of brands that have been around that are performance marketing brands centered, performance marketing centered brands, who are building content platforms. And I think you see that at the other end of the scale, where it's not just from, you know, the outdoor voices of the world who are, you know, putting out content, or, you know, MailChimp puts out content now, they've got video. But it's also Amazon has to make their platform stickier to keep people engaged, because there's everybody's competing for attention or real estate in the psyche of the consumer. And I think that's a really interesting problem to have to solve for, because eventually the skincare brand that, you know, could have been successful on Amazon as a direct play now has to compete with Lady Gaga's fame and the sort of press that goes along with that. And I think that that's a really interesting conundrum. Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries. For every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll, Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Future Commerce is brought to you by Gladly. For today's discerning customers, customer service has become the new marketing. The world's most customer-centric brands are realizing that great personalized experiences are the difference between thriving and dying. And that's why Gladly built a customer service platform that puts people at the center, not tickets or cases. By focusing on the customer, Gladly helps power a lifetime of naturally productive conversations across any channel, from phone, email, text, chat, and social media. Gladly helps companies better understand who their customers are, like what did they last reach out about, and whether or not they're more particular to kicking it in a pair of high tops or wingtips. With key customer context at their fingertips, companies can meet their customers where they are, and they're empowered to build the kinds of relationships that drive long-term loyalty and long-term revenue. It's tough to try to build a customer experience for the next 50 years using the technology of the past 50 years. See what a truly customer-centered platform looks like at gladly.com/FC demo. That's gladly.com/FC, as in Future Commerce, demo.
Did you watch Amazon TV at all? Have either of you watched Amazon TV?
No.
They basically had an almost QVC sort of style, a live TV show running throughout Prime Day. And I didn't know that you can just go watch it, I think, anytime.
Yeah.
I should double check that. But this is yet another way that upcoming brands can sort of spend money with Amazon and get their products highlighted and featured.
Yes.
I watched it for like maybe 2 minutes on Prime Day, just to kind of get a feel for it. And it was like, wow, like they're just going through the lightning deals one by one effectively. And like, they're talking about like the most random of products. This is clearly a pay-to-play channel. And so I think that what Amazon's doing, and just this is back to your point, Philip, is they're offering a lot of different ways that these brands can leverage the Amazon platform to get their products noticed. And so let's say, you know, price gets driven up in one area. They're making other avenues available to maybe brands that don't have as much spend to help them still be successful on Amazon. I think that eventually, you know, it will all be overtaken, but a lot of these channels are relatively new. So like you said, Philip, like as brands with backing come in and start to really like drive up price, then it might be difficult for some of these smaller brands to compete. That said, a lot of these brands with backing, I don't know they necessarily want to sell on Amazon. That might be the one sort of like balancing factor here. A lot of, you know, digitally native vertical brands that we've seen introduced have stayed away from Amazon very purposefully because the cost of acquisition is high, and you're not actually acquiring a customer. That's the other thing.
Not your customer.
If you want to build a brand on Amazon, you're not acquiring customers. You're just maybe you don't see a flood of money come in.
I'm curious what Kiri thinks. You know, she was talking in our pre-show about the spectrum of involvement in Amazon and sort of personas of companies that exist out there. Could you go into that a bit?
Kiri? Yeah, for sure. So there's a spectrum of involvement between actively invested on Amazon, which I'd put Anchor into that camp, which we already discussed in briefly, but essentially what they did, they launched on Amazon. They were only selling through Amazon for years, and they used, really smart about it, scanning their product reviews and competitor product reviews for specific feedback on what they needed to update about their products, and using all of that customer data and qualitative and quantitative data to inform what they were going to launch next or what new product category they would go into next. And now they're this very successful brand. And not for nothing, like 10 years ago when Amazon was doing, when Anchor was doing this, there was not nearly as much data available to them as there would be today. So I think if Anchor could have done it back then in a cutthroat category of consumer tech accessories, I think it's certainly possible to do the same thing. And we'll see just how many other examples pop up. That's certainly the most notable. And then we've got on the other end of the spectrum, actively unengaged with Amazon. And to your point, Brian, these new retail digitally native vertical brands are not on Amazon. Glossier, Away, have both came out and said, we're not going to be on Amazon because we want a connection with our customer. Ultimately, that was their rationale. So I think that in the case of those two, suitcases and makeup, there's nothing really super proprietary about those products. What they are riding on in that case is this extremely strong, loyal brand that they have built. And I think that that's interesting. And I'm interested to hear you guys' thoughts on how sustainable that is over the longer term. And then there's also some brands that I would say have more of a moat around their brand because their products aren't suited to an Amazon environment because of personalization. And there's two examples of this I'd give. One is Care Of, which is a supplement company that was co-founded by the ex-CMO of Bonobos, which was another non-Amazon brand. And so Care Of is collecting customer information and personalizing the product to them. So if I say I'm a vegan and I have an office job, so I don't get a whole lot of like daylight, then they're going to make sure that my supplements are in a vegan formulation and that have more vitamin D in my formulation or something like that. So that's one example of personalization. And the other one I like to talk about is Madison Reed, which is an at-home hair coloring product. And they have been really successful because of their personalization onboarding experience with customers as well, because a big complaint in that category is finding the correct shade. And so Madison Reed does extensive sort of quizzes and things like that to make sure that the customer gets the right shade from the beginning. But that wouldn't be possible on Amazon, except if you wanted to, you knew your shade and you were going to repurchase. So yeah, I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts since you cover content so much for these digitally native brands. Do you think that someone like a Glossier or an Away, you know, if we're talking about 10 years later, will they be able to maintain their groundswell and maintain their loyalty enough to stay differentiated enough to not have to be on Amazon?
It's a great question. And the answer is yes. I think we actually predicted at the beginning of the year that brands now have the ability to put together a tech stack that is quite similar to Prime, and also be able to build a brand separate from Amazon that really it makes Amazon Amazon set the expectation for how brands have to interact with their customers in terms of logistics, fulfillment, and so on, and now brands can deliver on that for a price that's, you know, palatable. You know, we've theorized that maybe even the cost of selling in brick and mortar is actually quite a bit more than putting together a tech stack as a, you know, a mid-level retailer that is on par with an Amazon-like experience. So you can use ShopRunner and personalization tools and all of these different tools that give your customers a very similar experience. Now, obviously, Amazon is great because you can just find everything there. but brands are building up relationships with customers they're thinking about the lifetime of the customer, not single purchases at this point. So brands like Away, brands like, you know, and Glossier, like you mentioned, and a ton of other brands that have actively decided not to use Amazon as a strategy, have have a million different ways of building up a loyal, not just a loyal customer following, but ways of reaching new customers as well without the help of Amazon.
I would kind of agree. I think the horizon is further out, though. I think the horizon is when a brand transcends the product, right? Because we have a lot of product-focused brands right now. Nike is not necessarily, when you think of like the best marketing engine in the entire world, it belongs to a product company, like a company that actually is a manufacturer. Nike is excellent at this. And Nike themselves have created ways to be everywhere by expanding category and offering that is differentiated to the marketplace that they're in. They're in outlet, they're in premium, they do exclusives, they do direct to consumer. They are everywhere. And I think if you take the horizon out 15 years, maybe a company like Allbirds, who is actively uninvested, might have a wide enough product category or have been purchased by a Nike to where a differentiation of the product to understand, like, I want to affiliate with the Allbirds brand, but it's not the Allbirds product that we know is the Wool Runner. There will be a way to expand into category. And I think you could do this today with Away, or any of them could do it. I mean, even Tumi has a consumer brand. Tumi sells an outlet, and they are a luxury, they're a luxury lifestyle, luggage brand. So I think that if you take it out far enough, the engine of need to grow and have more consumer adoption will necessitate playing in marketplaces like Amazon. But it's going to be a long time from now, and it will only happen when Samsonite, finally comes around to acquiring Away or something way more exciting than that. I would predict that, Away is actually an acquisition of, like a Hilton or a Marriott, right? Sort of, in that it's tangent. Part of it's the journey between, it's not just a consumer brand around product. It's a journey between the act of being out in the world and traveling. But anyway, I think so. I think that you can do it, but it's going to take a little while for those brands to have reached a certain saturation in the marketplace that will necessitate them having to do it to grow.
And I think you're stumbling on something here, which was the acquisition piece. There's going to be a lot of acquisitions. there are going to be multiple acquisitions in this space, but you're going to see a lot of brand, there's going to be a lot of additional innovation. Like, I don't think that, bigger brands, and conglomerates are just going to own everything. Actually, it benefits them to just continually have a healthy set of up-and-comers that they can acquire when they want. And to maybe even invest in some of them and sort of let them sit out there on their own, see how they fare, have that startup culture, have that culture of innovation that is very difficult to run in some of these big companies. Because of bureaucracy and so on. And so
entrenchment of ideas and that
exactly,
sort of thing.
Yes. So it benefits them immensely to just let those other brands kind of go out there and kind of win for a while until they feel like they've won enough where they can acquire them and definitely have a winner on their hands. Definitely see a lot of success ahead. Some of these brands, like Philip said, are going to be brands that we know for 15 years, and some of them are going to be brands that get filtered into a product assortment of a larger brand and sold on Amazon.
Well, Samsonite.
We don't know how to shut up, Kiri. Sorry, we have a lot to say.
No, it's all good. Well, Samsonite. I spoke with the chief e-commerce officer at Samsonite, Charlie Cole, for my book, and they are very forward thinking with Amazon. And you think about like the Samsonite and Tumi brands, premium, sort of premium position in the market, they still feel like Amazon is a really important channel for them, even for luxury brands. And if you rewound to 5 years ago, a lot of luxury brands would not have touched Amazon because they felt like it was sort of below them. And there's still a few categories, like beauty, I think, is one where there's still some of that thinking going on right now, like in the luxury beauty space. But that whole positioning of Amazon, not just as a place to buy your day-to-day essentials and sundries, but as a place to discover and research and buy anything from a $500 suitcase all the way down to like your toilet paper. So that's, I mean, I can't really think of another company that is able to span so many demographic thresholds and spending thresholds and different types of products like that. It is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, that's awesome. By the way, we love Charlie Cole, a friend of the show. He was on a month or two ago at this point. Yep.
Oh, good.
Speaking of your book, I'd love to hear more about Amazon for CMOs. What's it all about?
Yeah. So Amazon for CMOs is co-authored with my friend and colleague, Mark Power, who also runs an Amazon agency, but we're still friends. And so we just saw this real phenomenon happening where a lot of the frank and honest conversations about Amazon between executives at these sort of mid-sized brands was happening behind closed doors at happy hours, at retail conferences. And so it really, if you're going to get some really good advice from someone, it's really based on your network and how often you can meet up with these people. So we wanted to put a resource together for executives at retail companies and even non-endemic brands that, for example, Mitsubishi, who Mark interviewed for this book as well. Mitsubishi doesn't sell their cars on Amazon, but they advertise there and they capture that Amazon shopper through their media buying on Amazon. So we wanted to bring a guide back to this executive audience that was not just me and Mark's opinion of what you should do, or here's how this works and this is what you need to do about that program. We wanted to really bring the voice of the industry into this book as well and talk about how different brands are actually doing it, how they're approaching innovation, how they're approaching the walled gardens between Amazon, Facebook, and Google, and trying to make sense of, you know, where they're spending the money and what is an effective channel. So we cover a lot of ground in the book from, you know, those aspects to really a requirement of the CMO or whoever is really in charge of Amazon to get the rest of their organization on board as well, because it's not just the job of marketing. It's also, there's big decisions and collaboration needed with your operations area, with logistics and customer service. You need to also have your sales group on board as well so that you're all in sync across your different sales channels in stores and whatnot. So there's, once we sort of mapped out, well, what do we need to talk about here? What questions do people have? It blossomed into a pretty hefty book with about 15 interviews that we did with CMOs and executives at largely at retail companies.
Wow, that's super cool. I'm so excited to read this book. I love a good interview and hearing, you know, all these CMOs' opinions in one spot sounds amazing to me. To be able to compare them and sort of contrast what they say. This is going to be a great book. I'm really looking forward to it. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
Where can people find the book?
Well, on Amazon, naturally. we're launching on September 24th. we'll have Kindle paperback and we will certainly produce an Audible version as well, but I'm not sure that it's going to be fully ready for the 24th of September with the other versions. But if you want to get during this, I'm not sure when the show is going to air, but if you want to get a free copy of the Kindle version, we will be giving that away for free during the launch because, interestingly, with books on Amazon, there's not as many rules around promotions and reviews as there are in other categories. That's a little hack I'll tell everyone about, but it's a little more of even more of a Wild West than the rest of Amazon, which is interesting.
Huh, that is interesting. Well, we like to close out the show with our favorite question, which is, looking ahead to the next, you know, the near future, and then also looking ahead maybe 3 to 5 years out, what do you see as the future for Amazon? Like, are they going to offer Prime, you know, on other people's sites, or what do you see ahead?
Oh, I see some external factors coming into Amazon's future, and a lot of them around regulation and all the antitrust speculation right now. So I actually believe that AWS is going to be spun off from Amazon. I think that that makes is the best division of their company to spin off. But I think that there's so much scrutiny on Amazon now. It's only going to continue heating up. And I think that they will either be told or decide of their own volition to actually sort of break up the company a little bit in order to fly under the radar just a little bit more.
Good prediction. I like that a lot. So you think AWS is going to get split off or something like that?
Yeah, I think AWS is the best candidate because it will be able to stand on its own two legs. And then playing that out into what that looks like for retail, I mean, AWS was built for Amazon internally initially, and I'm sure, you know, all of their infrastructure would be built on that system. So if AWS is then separated out, will the retail division have to start paying market rates for AWS and then increase their cost basis for running retail? That, you know, what do you guys think about that?
Certainly been on my mind. I can say that.
There's an interesting dynamic there. I think one could look backward not too far in the past to see, you know, how antitrust in the United States has, you know, helped break apart, you know, companies like Ma Bell and eventually, you know, those companies all come back together. And and now we, you know, we're back to big conglomerate. And so I think there is some like a cyclical nature here to that. I think you also have then a sort of, while they have a natural monopoly in some areas, you know, splitting them up might actually worsen that in a bunch of ways, because they're probably beholden to other parts of the business to create and innovate for Amazon internally. And if they were released from that, what else could they do that could deepen their stronghold to actually build for market need? And I think that might be just pontificating, but I digress. The next few years look like they're going to be pivotal. Really, really interesting. And thank you, Kiri, so much for your time and all your expertise. It's been amazing to talk to you. I can't wait to read the book. And just as a reminder for people who are listening, where can they find you online?
So you can learn more about the book at amazonforcmos.com. And if you want to connect with me personally, the best place to do that is on LinkedIn. I think I'm the only Kiri Masters that will pop up in search.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us. And thank you for listening. We want you to lend your voice to this conversation. You can do that at futurecommerce.fm. You can also like and subscribe anywhere where podcasts are found: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher Premium, and on any Amazon powered smart speaker device with the phrase "Play Future Commerce Podcast." and as we now say, the future of commerce is what you make it.
And we help you shape that future. Thanks for listening.
The audio version of our show is produced by Chris Harry at Pod Sherpa. Show notes are written by Jordan Griffey and Leanne Heikend. Scheduling and coordination are provided by Aaron DeCruz. Our intro music is composed and performed by Spectral Wolf. Future Commerce is a production of Protein Commerce, LLC.